This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2022, held at Horizon Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, on March 4 and 5.
All right, good morning. Before we get started here, my name is Ernie Weaver. I'm from the community of Osceola, Texas. I'm sorry, can everybody hear me okay? I'm from the community of Osceola, Texas. It's about an hour and a half south of Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, which these days, with the way land is going, we feel like we're in the Metroplex anymore. One of five board members at our school, James Martin over here, is another one of the board members. We all are here, along with one of our administrative team teachers is here as well. So there's six of us here this time. We have 84 students, I believe. And that's probably about as big as our school is going to get. I think next year is 90. We serve primarily one church. And so we have a few community people that come, but we're not like some of you that serve a larger community that have multiple churches represented in one school. So I'm not 100% sure that our school is a large school. They asked me to have this topic, so here we go. Here in a minute, we're going to get into a big part. This is a long session, so strap in, because we're going to be here for a minute. And I'm going to depend on y'all to talk about the challenges and opportunities. So the way I want to format this is I'm going to start and talk about what I see as the challenges and opportunities, and then we're going to do some statistics. We're going to take a poll from all of you about the size of schools that you represent. And we'll kind of get a feel for what this group represents. And if there's small schools in here, just, you know, you're not in the wrong place. Speak out. There was a time when our school was 18 students and almost to stop existing as a school. And it went from that to 84 students in the same community. The community obviously grew. It wasn't that nobody came to school, but that's a long story. But my point with that is where there's vision, there's growth. Things are developing. And it's not just growth in numbers. There's growth in other ways. We're going to get into some of that. So even if that you're a small school here, I'm glad you're here, because someday you may be a large school and you need to be preparing for that. So challenges and opportunities of a larger school. So challenges and opportunities, it's this way across the board. Most times a challenge is an opportunity, and an opportunity also has a challenge. It's two sides to the same coin. So when you talk about a large school and we talk about some of the opportunities of a large school, there's also a challenge that goes with that side. So we're kind of addressing one at a time. But it's the same format. We're going to talk about the same things on both sides of the coin. So probably one of the biggest challenges is people. More people, more challenges. So we're going to start on the challenges side. So when you have more people, there's more people involved. You're going to have more teachers probably. And the teachers will start to kind of have their own. You know, if you have three teachers and the board shows up, they want to talk to you. If you have seven or eight teachers and the board shows up, they're high, we're having our conversation. Some of those things can tend to happen. You get enough teachers, you can have groups of teachers that are having relationship together that don't get along with each other. And so now you have a larger dynamic. You have two, maybe three teachers, and they can't get along with each other, the board's there dealing with it. I mean, it's just one group. More families, more diversity. There again, more people. There's more people to interact with. A broader diversity of people that you represent. A lot of times when you get into a larger school, not really the case for us, but it's multiple churches are involved. So now you have different cultures, you have different expectations. All these things come into play. More board members. Communication is important and harder. Gone are the days, if you're a large school, gone are the days where you can pick up the phone and call the other board member and have a great discussion and say, hey, we just need to call the other guy and make a decision right now. So you can conference him in, problem solved. Then those days are gone. You have to get everybody together, have to stay on schedule, make your decisions in a timely manner. One of the other challenges is money. More money, more problems. Larger budgets to maintain. All of those things. A challenge of a large school is structure is needed. And if you're a person that loves structure, it's great. It's not a challenge. But if you're somebody that does not enjoy structure and doesn't enjoy things being complicated and systemized and organized and set aside, then that's a challenge. The school becomes cumbersome and heavy. It just seems like you can't get anything done. You're always waiting on somebody to do something. Or it's not the right procedure. We can't do it that way. We have to stop, circle back, and do it the right way. And if you don't enjoy challenge, you enjoy spontaneity. If you don't enjoy structure and you enjoy spontaneity, that's a real problem. It's a challenge. You're constantly bucking that. I have the unique situation of going from a small school to a large school in a matter of few short years. And I don't enjoy structure, personally. So it's difficult. We can't do things the way we used to do them, and I don't like that. It's not any fun. It takes the joy out of school. I'm more of an entrepreneur. I love to start things. I like to grow things. And running things is just hard work. But a large school just needs to be run. You don't need to be trying to come up with new ideas to solve big problems. You need to let the system take care of itself. You need to let the right people make the right decision. And sometimes you just need to be quiet and let it happen. So if you're not a structured person, that's a challenge. Here again, we're going to look at this on the opportunity side. So another challenge is the student body. So you can run into, you have 30 students, the numbers are in your favor. You may or may not have a representation of all student types. If you have 100, 200 students, there's a high probability that you're going to have an extremely precocious child that you just cannot figure out how to educate because they can read by the time they come to kindergarten. Or on the same thing, on this other spectrum, you'll have somebody that's severely challenged and just can hardly function in a school environment. You'll also have, so with normal being in the center, which what is normal, right? We all think we're normal. Then on this side, you're going to have really gifted children and a large quantity of them in the same class where you have dyslexic and slower students, other challenges. You just have a broader base of everything. And so that's a challenge. How are you going to address? How are you going to... I have this statement that school is an exercise in becoming normal. One of the reasons I send my children to school, I have some children on both sides of the spectrum. I have one child that's just pretty gifted. And he doesn't want to go to school. He knows everything that the teacher's going to say. He can read the lesson in 2 minutes and he's got it. Why do the exercises? Well, that's not the way the world works. You can't go through life not participating with other people. You have to go through the exercises. If you're in church life, you have to go through the exercises. You cannot be this Albert Einstein over here in the corner living your life. You have to fit in with society. So that can be a challenge to try to fit in and bring all of these different giftings to the table. So, what are the opportunities? Well, like I said, same coin, different side. More people. It's a great thing. You have more people. You have more board members. You can share out the load. You have more ideas. You sit in a board member in a board meeting and there's just two or three of you there. You can get stumped. There's five of you there. There's somebody else to bring up ideas. You can get more things done. More people. There's more to spread around. You have more teachers on the team. You might be able to afford support staff, secretary, librarian, somebody else to just come in and help get things done. That's a great opportunity. And you can build teamwork. There's more people there to interact with. More parents, broader diversity. We'll get into that next. More students. If you're a teacher and you love to teach, and you have a room full of people, that's a lot of fun. If you've got two or three people, you're just like, there's not enough people here to listen to me. So it's an opportunity. It's a great opportunity. More money, more resources. Larger school, theoretically, you have more money. You have more things you can do. You can build a facility that's nice. I had the privilege of last night going by. How many of you are from this local community? Is there anybody in here from this school? Okay, we can talk about it. Oh, there is? Oh.
Go ahead and say it. You probably heard it.
That was more tongue-in-cheek. No, I had the opportunity of going past where this school used to house. Used to be. That's a world of difference. I mean, no offense, it was small.
It's old.
It was old. Not laid out very well. Not a very big property. More students, more resources, more money. You can have a facility like this, right? That's a blessing. It's a good thing. Just little things like the lockers in the classroom not being metal. Furniture lockers, and that's incredible. Yeah, we'd all love that. So more money, you have better facilities. You have more things that are wants and not needs. And you can, put a lot of things in the, which side is it, a want or a need? Like telescopes and science equipment. And just, you can go down this line. Is it a want or is it a need? Well, if you have a larger school, you'd probably have a larger budget. There's more things in the want category that are possible for you. And that's a good thing, I guess. There's more structure. So if you love structure, everything just works. Everybody has a job to do. Everybody does their job and things get done. It's really nice. If you love structure, things happen orderly. There's more accountability. Things are supposed to get done by a certain time. If they're not getting done by that time, you find somebody on the team that is good at getting them done on time, and you give that to them, and things just work. The right board members have the right seats on the board. The right teachers have the right seats in the school. You can go, the last board meeting we had, we set the whole board meeting aside to tackle a special project. There was no new business. Everybody was just doing what they were supposed to do. And that's a good thing. You have time as a board and resources as a board to start looking long term, long range, down the road, and start to create vision and procedures and spend time organizing things and not just reacting to problems. You have structures of authority in the school to where the board's not bogged down with teacher squabbles and parent squabbles and some of those things. And then back to the last thing of a better representation of student type or more students. You have more personalities. You have more gifted students. You have the ability to take care of maybe some of these struggling students better. Have more resources to help them. So that's my 2-minute overview of the challenges and opportunities. And hopefully there's enough meat in the rest of the hour that we have together to talk about what you want to talk about. And so first thing I want to do is I want to take a poll on the sizes of the schools here. And then also I want you to think about what challenges you're facing. I want this to be a resource. So something that our board does when we come to CASB is we bring a burning question to CASB. What is the one thing we want to go home having found answers to? And so if you're here and you have a large school and you have problems in your large school, I want this to be a safe place where we can get those problems out and talk about it, and hopefully across the group, we can bring some fresh ideas, more people to bring ideas to the table. So we'll start with the poll. How many in here have a student count of 10 to 30 students? Okay. 31 to 60. Okay. 61 to 99. I should have broken that. Okay, thank you. I should have broken that down. That's the highest represented. 100 to 150. Okay. It's a close tie. And then 150 to 200. Nobody in here over 150 students. So I won't ask the other one, 200 plus. Okay. So let's break this down some more. I didn't do very well at that. Let's do it again. We're going to go from 60 to 150. Give me a moment here. Not that it really matters. It's just easier when we're talking about this to think through this. So we're going to go 30 to 50. We're going to go 50 to 60. 60 to 70. No, that's too complicated. How many 30 to 50? 50 to 75. 75 to 85. 85, or what is that? 86 to 100 in 20s.
120.
How many?
You said 120?
No, to 100. What did I say? Yeah, 80 to 100. And then 100 to 120. Okay. All right, that's better information. So 100 to 120 is probably the largest representation here. Okay. Thank you. I know that was difficult. So of the, how many of you here don't have full K through 12? You don't only have elementary or up to 8th grade. Don't have K through 12. And you still have 120 students?
It's about 110.
Wow.
Plus Lancaster.
Yes, say no more. That's just phenomenal to me, because about half of our school is high school. It's usually, which we start high school at 7th grade, junior high, technically, K through 6, elementary, and then we have junior high and high, and those are about half and half. Number of full-time staff that are in your school. Let's just take a quick poll on that. How many of you have 5 or less? Teachers, it's everybody that comes to school every day. If it's a librarian, a special ed teacher, they come forth at least 3 days a week. Let's put it that way. 5 or less. 5 to 9. More than 10. Okay. More than 15? Well, I'm impressed. Some of those that are 10 to 15, you have a really good student count, or student to teacher ratio. And that's one of the blessings of a large school. You can have a strong... So in public school, that's the metric that everybody wants to know. What's your student to teacher ratio? Because it's no secret that the less students you have with a teacher, the better education you're going to get. And so the better student to teacher ratio that you can get, the better it is. I don't know that this matters, but what budget per student are you working with? So we're 35. James, what is ours this year?
300. Budget per student?
Per year. Isn't it? 3,600? Somewhere around there. Maybe you don't know that number, but if you do, how many of it's less than 3,000 per student? How many of you is 3,000 to 3,500, let's say? Above 3,500? Above 4,000? Whew. I hope you have a Taj Mahal. That's great, and it's great. Really good. I am super passionate about budgets, not because money is the solve all problems. But you can tell how much somebody cares about something about by how much money they spend on it.
I'm sorry, I was going by patron. I was going by patron family. You asked
by student.
By student. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I was wrong.
I was hopeful. Anybody in here that's more than 4,000 a student? You know what the average in America in public school is? Does anybody know?
15. I think it's, well, I say Kansas is 20,000.
I thought it would be around 15.
the number I read, maybe this is just Texas, is 13,000 per student. You can also tell more of, if you look, this is me, this isn't science, but if you want to know how much money an organization makes, go look at the buildings that they build. I'm a concrete contractor, and when I look at the building plans for a public school, they build them like tanks. They spare no cost. So that tells you that they have tons of money. You don't build a building that's bulletproof and 10 foot tall if you're on a tight budget. They waste. And then they have schools. We don't get into public school. That's a disaster. Which is also an opportunity for us because more and more people are saying we're not doing that anymore. And they're looking to us to fill that void, which is a good thing. In our community, I don't know what the annual number is, but we're like, what, on a 12-month, what does that come to?
It's like 305.
305 a month. The other private schools in our community that people are shopping us against are in the $600 to $700 a month range. So what is that times 12? Do the math for me while I talk.
$7,800.
So yeah, so other private schools are probably $7,000. So you see where we're at? And we have to spend more money on school. And whoever had the talk the other day, I don't remember who it was, but he said the exact same thing that I've been saying for a long time. There's three ways that we fund our schools. Stop looking at what your parents can afford, because that's not the number to look at. Private, custom, personal, all of those adjectives demote or talk about expensive, right? If you want a custom home, you want a custom truck, you want custom care, right? It's all expensive. That word means expensive. And so when you have a private school, it's expensive. It's one of the most expensive ways to educate your children. Stop trying to skimp and save on it. I'm off topic. I'm way off topic. But all that to say, we are nowhere near money-wise where we need to be. And we should all have buildings like this. I mean, it's a nice building, but it is not near the money that's spent on public schools. And I know you can't pay for the public school and pay for your own school. That's difficult. But avail yourself of the three things. The wealthy among us, what people can do, and spreading it out over a lifetime. And there's another one that I say, is as a business owner in any community, you should care about the way that that your future employees are being trained, and you should invest heavily in that. There's large companies that spend a lot of money giving to colleges so that they get first chance at the people that come out of that. And you as a business owner in your community should be doing the same thing for your school. You should spend money to make sure that the people that come out of that school are well-educated, not just academically, but character-wise, socially trained, so that they can get along with everybody else. And you need to spend money on good teachers that will train on those things. Not from a selfish perspective, but that's the way the economy works. You need to think about the way things work like that. All right. So, one last question, and this is all just to help the discussion. So when we dive into this, we can help you better as a group. How many of you serve one community plus a few outliers? Like, I doubt anybody in here only serves one community. So one community and a few outliers. Multiple church communities. Okay. I take my hat off to you on those. We have enough problems with one church. I can't imagine trying to blend multiple churches. And I would love to hear from you. So we're fixing to dive into discussion time. I would love to hear from you. How do you navigate multiple churches being a part of the same school? So, I'm going to stop talking for a minute, and I'm going to allow you. I have some questions that I've got. What are some challenges that you're facing? Burning question.
Finding teachers.
Sorry, somebody said something else?
I said in our area.
Where are you at?
Goshen.
I'm going to try really hard not to preach up here. Try really hard.
shouldn't have a problem finding a teacher in Goshen, Indiana. Are you paying a living wage?
Not yet.
Well, when you're spending $4,000 a student, come talk to me. You have the money in your community. Any community has $4,000 a student. Don't kid yourself. Anybody have some advice? How do you find teachers? How do you find teachers? Let's start there. What's your recruitment process look like? What's your recruitment process?
Same problem? Same, yeah, we have some of the same. We have done better keeping teachers long term here. There is some little bit of turnover this year that we need to work on. Back to his problem, his thing about you not paying a living wage, it's a long cultural cycle that feels like it needs change. You've addressed it, but like, so you can get your people to appreciate it and to get a budget that's worthy to pay a living wage. I wish you could just say, it needs done, let's just do it next week. But there's someone's got to catch the vision and change the community.
100% agree with you, but for those of you that are sitting in the room, what does it take to change a culture? Vision. It takes somebody that says, we're going there, who's with me, here's how we're going to get there. So if you need better teachers and you're tired of looking for teachers, and it's this huge drag. I mean, you spend 3 or 4 months making phone calls and stressing. I got other stuff to do. I don't need to be doing this, right? Fix the culture. That's the easiest thing to fix. No, it's not. It's the easiest way to solve a problem.
I was going to say, you don't live in Elkhart County.
My dad lived just down the street from there for a while, so I've been there. Here's a way to keep teachers. Build them a nice building.
How do you determine living wage?
There's a lot of different things. If I asked you right now, in the community, where do you live?
San Francisco,
Belleville.
Yeah.
If you bought a house in Belleville, and you bought gas in Belleville, and you bought groceries in Belleville, and you needed $1,000 a month extra for walking around money, what would that look like? And that's close to a living wage. The other thing is to go around and look at what the middle is. So you can't look at the people that can't get their act together, and you can't look at the people that are independently wealthy. The middle part of the church, kind of the run of the mill, are they earning 30 to 50? Are they earning 50 to 75? What is that? And you should probably be somewhere in the middle. That's a living wage. How do you know living wage? I think the last study that I read says that 75,000, and this was probably 2020 numbers, not 2021 or 2022. Inflation is killing us. But at 75,000, you do not have to worry about money as much. So that was the number where they kind of said it crossed the line. That's an economist's opinion. Our top teachers are 55. We have some young ladies that are still in the 30s. We're not happy about that, but yeah. Yes.
Our school is 6 years old, and we're living and learning. But the Amish, they have two classroom schools, and when they reach 40, they start another school, and they have, I'm amazed at how many men teachers they got, and when you ask about the minimum wage, they go, they ask their board members, where do you work? Well, not where they work, how much do you make in a year? And we got trailer factories, and them guys make six digits
right.
a year. And they say that's what, you know, they say we got to pay our teachers, and they pay their teachers really good.
Yep.
And they got good teachers.
Yep, you sure do. Because the people that want to teach love to teach. And if you give them enough money to survive, they will happily teach. How many times will you do something for a little less money if you love it? Right? It's just the way the world works. Coming back to wages, you really need to... money's not everything. But, and this is another topic, way off topic, but let me just talk about it for a second. So culture is very important in a church. And it's forget about keeping up with the Joneses. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, if your friends have this lifestyle and you don't, you're most likely going to, people that are together tend to equalize a little bit. And they're going to want that lifestyle. So if everybody in your community makes $100,000 and you pay the teachers $40,000, they're not going to be teachers. Doesn't matter how much they love to teach, they cannot. Either they'll go somewhere else where they can teach for $40,000 and everybody else makes $40,000, right? They might do that. But you have to match somehow. They have to be able to buy a house, raise their family, and live a regular, whatever that means, in their community. That is true. We're blessed. We're very blessed. We have four men on our staff that live in the community, raise their families in the community, send their children to school, and we just ask them every year, you're still planning to teach next year, right? That's as far as asking teachers goes with them. Two of them are our pastors, so they're not going anywhere. So we're blessed. We don't look for men teachers. If you can figure out how to get rid of looking for lady teachers, we're working hard on that. That's the next challenge that I have. When you find young ladies that are really good teachers and that have their act together and know how to get along with people, they get married. Just no solving that problem.
I hate that. How can we solve that problem? Yeah. We have three engaged.
We do too. One just got married, and one's getting married over the summer. We're having to redo. Yeah, we're having to look for teachers. I can't solve that problem. So, my solution is start looking for. Okay, there's two ways to solve this problem. One way that we're working on this is onboarding is a huge issue. So the first thing we did is we got young ladies out of first grade. We only have a career man teacher teach first grade. Because first grade is so fundamental and sets the stage for the rest of your school. You cannot mess up first grade. When you take a 19-year-old girl, sweetheart, really good girl, but she doesn't know what she's doing, and put her in first grade, you pay the price for that all the way through school. Stop doing that. Put somebody in there that has a vision for what the foundation looks like and can bring resources to your table. And when little Johnny is in school for 2 weeks, he's raising alarm bells. This child is going to need something different in school. You have a 19-year-old girl I haven't taught before. She just loves on Johnny. In second grade, teacher goes, there's a problem here. Why didn't anybody look at this? So stop putting young ladies in first grade. The second problem is, hire your alumni. They don't need nearly as much training. They are locked and ready. We will not hire somebody the year after they graduate. They have to have a year off. If they get married in that time, so be it. But hire your alumni. The time, and you don't have near as much training. They can fit in. They can serve for a couple of years and get married, and it's no harm to the school. And if you're doing a good job, you have plenty of alumni, and you need to be training teachers in your school. That needs to be a job that you do. The other approach that I'm working on, it's more difficult, is find older women, maybe that have raised a family, that are looking for something to do. Or older single ladies that have said, I'm going to make teaching a career. Look for those people, pay them $50,000 a year, help them buy a house, and help them settle into your community, and give them the what they need to flourish in your community. And come to my next session, we'll talk more about that.
Did I hear you say you hire men for first grade?
Yes.
You do. So I got a question for you. How do you find those men?
It's tough, but we're fortunate.
But there's also a stigma where a guy teacher at first grade is like,
oh, ew. It was pulling hen's teeth. And women in the church were crying foul. Oh, it was tough. Yeah. It was tough. But after 2 days, they sent their little children, and they're like, are you sure you're going to do this? And it's the board members' wives that were the hardest on us.
What are you thinking? I'm not sending my sweet little 66-year-old to some man to take care of all day. Anyway.
2 days later, oh, you hired the greatest teacher. I'm so glad you hired. You got to find the right guy. Good stuff.
I mean, Lyndon Hartman taught for 7 years or whatever, I heard. But yeah, I wasn't sure even how that even worked. Right.
And you wouldn't think it. Trentus Hostetler is our first grade. You wouldn't think it. He's not just a genteel type. He's a guy. But he has a way with children, and he can just break it down. He loves teaching that age level. He cares about it, and he's not just singing Kumbaya. Like he's focused in on the metrics. When do they have to be reading by? What are the early indicators? He came up with, here's another advantage of having a man in first grade, and they're thinking big picture. This is their career. This is what they do now. They're thinking about, what are the tools that I need? So if you're in a trade, you're in it a few years, you're like, there's got to be an easier way to do this, right? And you start looking for tools and bringing resources in, and that's what he's done. He's brought in a lot of resources, and so he's thinking long term, bringing in assessment tests right away, starting to administer these things, looking for the problems, paying attention to where the issues are. And I'm preaching again. I told you I wasn't going to do that. What else? What other problems do you have?
So do you hire young men or older men first grade?
Oh, older men.
Okay.
I wouldn't hire a 20-year-old to teach first grade. And you probably want to hire somebody that's had children. So if you've had children, you know how to take care of a 6-year-old girl that's crying, right? You've done that before. Mama went to town, you have 2 little girls, and you're like, oh, you figure it out, right? They should have children.
We have a 30-year-old single lady that's doing a super job.
In first grade.
First grade.
Works.
She's been there.
There again.
Over 10 years.
Right. She's a career teacher. That works too. I'm not trying to say they have to be male. Career teacher is my point. You need to find somebody that's a career teacher. It can be a lady. The first grade is important, and you need to pay attention to the career aspect of first grade.
So when is a class size too big? So we're in the midst of trying to, I'm looking for some teachers, and they ask how many students. So I think I'm scaring new teachers off because.
What are you trying to hire for? What class size?
20.
Oh, yeah, no, you won't find. That's no.
2 grades, 3rd and 4th.
Yeah.
So it's
a challenge.
With a bigger school, then you got to get another room. You got to.
Yep. Oh, we deal with that all the time. So we buy used school rooms from Dallas. You know the exterior school rooms? Everybody hates them because they look junky. And if Dallas is getting rid of them, they look junky. So, yeah.
So what is an average? What's the size that you can put? You know, so after a while, pay doesn't. If you're mental capacity can only
yep.
take so much, you can't pay a teacher enough to get it thrown out.
Right. So I took careful notice to how many lockers you had in the classroom. When we built our facility, we had a size. This is the most amount of students we'll have in this room. So what is the most amount of students you'll have in a room?
15 to 20 per grade.
15 per 20 per grade? So if you put 2 grades together, you'll have 40?
No, one teacher.
One teacher, 15 to 20. Anybody else want to volunteer?
I do a limit of 25.
Limit of 25.
That's dual classroom, so that would be 2 grades.
2 grades.
1 grade, I would do up to 20 to 25 in 1 grade.
Okay. So 25 is pretty much your max.
Yeah.
1 grader.
That would be 1 grade.
But she said 2 grades, so her max is still 25.
Mm-hmm. Hire her.
Yeah. I don't think she's hireable. Yeah.
She might be. Just kidding.
If she's in a school that has 25 students in a classroom, nobody's getting her. I can tell you that. That's a lot of work. Anybody else want to volunteer?
20 to 25 per room.
Wow, y'all are putting 25 people in a room? Well, I guess if your budget's low, you have to. There's no other way. You gotta fix that.
Keep coming back to money.
You gotta fix that. You're not getting quality education at 25 students in a room. Oh, gotta fix that too. I'm preaching again. More thoughts.
You can pay your teacher better if she's teaching 20 or 25
yep.
and have more resources.
Yep.
And you can pay for a helper.
So we do that when we're hiring teachers. We have two job openings. You want one class that's 13 students or two that's 20? This one pays 30, this one pays 40. Take the pick. And they'll take the pick. It's an idea. But you're right. Well, how many students is it? 20? I'll think about it.
It's tough. What else do you, what else? Go ahead.
So we got 18 kindergartens this year.
Good for you.
Next year, it was gonna, on the enrollment, we're going to 26.
Mm-hmm.
We say, that's way too many.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? We got two supporting churches. We have, there's probably a total of four, maybe five other churches that bring their children in there. So all of a sudden, you know, we got a meeting and we're going to upset someone. So we put it down that no kindergartners unless they're going to be from the supporting church. So now we've got problems otherwise.
Probably not how I would have solved that problem, but I understand
what you're saying. What have you done?
Hire another teacher.
We don't have the room.
Make the room. Go to Dallas and get a used storage building. They're $2,500.
But you're going to have to stop somewhere.
Okay.
I mean, if...
Then don't make the decision between two churches.
We had to do something. We look at
I'm not raining on your parade. Good job.
Well, but I'm just saying, you know, what do you do? Because you look at the overall picture, and we came up with all kinds of different options.
Yep.
And
yep.
You know, you're gonna have to do. You're gonna have to do something. What we took in the people that were coming to school there and our supporting churches, we took the first 1 year old to the 5 year olds. If we keep going with what we're doing, we only got 10 grade. I mean, we're adding the 10 graders with 11 and 12.
Sure.
So we're still
still growing.
To go. And if we keep doing what we're going to be doing, we're going to be hitting pretty close to 200. And
you don't want to do that.
We ain't going to do that.
Well, especially not at the prices that you're doing it for. If you were getting 4,000 a student, maybe you could. But your stress level is through the roof. I feel for you. Okay, so here's a tip that we did. So we were fast growing. We're at 40 students. Next year it's going to be 50. It's like, how do you plan? Rooms, teachers, you got to know. So we took an Excel spreadsheet, went around the community, and everybody that had a child that probably was sending their students to school, we put them in the spreadsheet. And even today, when a child is born, we put them in the spreadsheet. That gives us a 5-year look ahead as to what our student count's probably going to be. It never hits. Our money is, we have a budget from the church per student that the church puts into the school fund, into the school's bank account that we can spend out of. We lock that in November. So we're already locked in for next year. The student count changes, our budget doesn't change. People pull their children out last minute or want to send them last minute. Unless we hit 15% difference. So this goes back to bigger schools. Take a step back and start looking up ahead. Look out ahead. Start solving long-term problems. Bring in staff that can solve the today problems, and you start looking out ahead. You need to be, because you're right, what are these poor parents going to do? They have 9 months to figure out how they're going to educate their child. And I'm sure they're mad at you. They are not happy. Because to them, it felt arbitrary. And now they're in a lurch because you couldn't plan ahead. Poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. I feel for you. I mean, you probably made the right decision. And I'm blessed to work with the board because a lot of my ideas get squashed. So don't take offense to what I'm saying.
You're also fortunate you're the only church sending them there.
But we've run up against top limits.
Do you have community people coming in?
We do.
So you can tell them no easier.
Sure, and we do.
That spreadsheet you're talking about though gives you the foresight to tell someone
yes.
No. We're going to have problems in 5 years.
So we look at, here's the other issue that we have. We're one community, and so communities act alike. So our birth rate is on a cycle. It's just the way it is. This year we had 4 first graders, next year it's 13. And next year it's going to be 5 again. Well, we can see all of that, and we can make some of those projections. We can figure out what grades we're going to put. We have a lot more time to start working on that problem. And we tell the administrative staff, you work on this problem. You have a man that you're paying $50,000 a year to teach 4 students? Like, the math doesn't work, right? You got to figure that out. Any other questions?
So we have some, but we represent probably about 9 or 10 different churches.
Oh, wow.
Rush, we have some Russian Mennonites that come. We have some foreign Mennonites that send to our school. And I guess because they recognize the value of a Christian education, so.
It's funny to say, how do you, they can't stand the culture, but they want the benefits. Anyway,
yeah.
Off topic.
So how do you mesh that all together?
Oh, it's tough. So. Anybody have advice for
us? Is the school to be a mission or to educate our children?
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Does your school have a mission statement?
Yeah.
What does that mission statement say? Can you quote it?
No.
You need to be able to quote your mission statement.
Don't ask me what mine is. No. Mine is, it's something like, I don't have it memorized, but it's something like, our goal is to assist parents in educating their children to be 21st century kingdom builders. Something in line, I don't have the wording right, but that's our mission. So, very clear, anytime we run into a problem, we are assisting parents. We're not in charge, we're assisting parents. So we make a decision that's in the best interest of parents. Your school may not have that mission statement, but that's ours. And you need to know what your mission is, and it helps you make some of those decisions. Preaching again. Let me hear from y'all. How can we answer this question?
Some of the problem is not so much you know what you're hot when you bring families in, but then 4 years later they change. They're not in the conservative Anabaptist. Now we have to tell them, see you later.
You, listen to me closely. I'm fixing to drop a truth bomb on you. Listen closely. You are not a public school. Do not be afraid. And here's your answer. Don't be afraid to tell people no. We have church members. We expel their students. Well, now we go to the church and say, there's a hurting family that has a child that needs the church. The school's not the place for them anymore. They need a church. Please, church, will you step up and take this child? We're not public school. We have a responsibility to all the students, and we have a responsibility to the parents. Let me ask you this. Do you understand who your customer is? Who's your customer? Who's your customer?
Parents.
The parents. What's your product? What's your deliverable?
Children.
The children. And who's your boss? Who's the stakeholder? It's probably different for all of us. In our case, it's the church. So we are considered, in our congregation, we're considered a mission arm of the church. We are a ministry of the church. So that answers. We answer to the brotherhood. They elect the board. They set our budget. We administrate our budget. We give them a proposal and they vote on it. So we do all the heavy lifting. But we are clearly, if you understand who the stakeholder is, who your customer is, and what your deliverable is, some of these questions get a little easier. So who's your stakeholder? If it's the church that you serve, then that was the right decision. Sorry. Can't help you. You're not a public school. You can't take everybody. You've got to make the best decision for your community, whoever the stakeholder is, who's receiving the benefit. And that's what you did. So good. Any other questions?
Are those larger schools that accept children from a non-conservative, from the outside conservative circles, how do they dress code is a huge thing.
Sure.
Obviously, we have it stated for the students. What about the parents when they're participating in school functions?
How do you deal with that? Anybody? How many of you have I'm going to just use church members, and that might be multiple churches, right? But somebody that's in a church that surrounds your church, like, include all those in one category. How many of you have people outside of that spectrum in your schools? So you all deal with this. How are you dealing with it? How do you deal with it?
We don't so much.
That's a good answer. It's a problem waiting to happen.
I know we have something written up that we have requirements of things that have to be happening in the home for people that do want to send their children to our school.
How do you enforce that?
I think it might be looked at a little bit on a year-to-year basis. I do think it's reviewed a little bit every year. I don't know that there's a perfect answer to that, but I do feel it needs to keep being revisited possibly every year for some situation.
Maybe just some clarification. This is the first year we're coming up against it. And in the handbook, there's the old statement, families with TB were not accepted. That used to rule things out.
Yeah, that's the point.
That's antiquated. Yeah. That's antiquated.
It means nothing. A surprising number of homes don't have TVs in them anymore anyway. More ideas. How would you solve this? Y'all have... Did you raise your hand? How would you solve it?
We use the church as the church standard or as a guiding line.
Okay.
And in school, it's enforced as far as in our home, it's not school.
Okay. Makes sense. Anyone else? Who else over here raised their hands that has... Yeah, what do?
We pretty much the same way. We have a dress code in school, but that they wouldn't follow. But as far as in the home, we've had some really good patrons that very respectful that their children did not go to a church.
So, go back to the core principles. You're not a public school. If you don't like them, don't take them. If you're worried about how the parents are going to show up at events, don't take the student. Just solve the problem early. Our requirement is you have to attend a church. We don't say what kind of church. You just have to attend, because we are a Christian school. And so if you're not interested in Christian values, we're not the school for you. If you're an atheist and you don't like public school, we're not the school for you. So we have an interview process, and the board does that interview. The board has to be comfortable that this parent is going to fit into our... We have a large aurora of ex-Mennonite around us, that's where a lot of the pool comes from. We do have some people request that we're known in the community. There's a lot of people that work for us, and those employees, or work for people in the community, those employees will tell all their friends, best school in the area, go try it. But we're not welcoming the masses, and so it's a pretty rigorous process. And if you're paying taxes and you want to spend, and then the other, our competitors are twice our price, and so we don't have a lot of demand. If you're that serious about a private education, you're going to spend $700 on it and not $300.
So are you taking a lot of your ex-church brothers' children into your school, and is that working?
Some. It usually works for about 2 or 3 years. And they figure out that life is a holistic approach, and they get tired of it.
But how's your school culture? To me, it would seem like it could affect the people that you really want to focus on, and now you have a culture that's going to be...
Oh, we wouldn't accept those. We wouldn't accept. There's some people we wouldn't accept.
And how do you decide you don't have to accept them?
It's an interview with the board. Sorry, it won't work.
Because you have an attitude towards that family, and then you decide not to hire them? Bring them in?
How does that work? Because you have a room, then you let another family come the next day.
Well... So it's a little hypothetical because we don't have that many. So if they're that mad at us, they're not going to try to send their students.
They will eventually.
They go to the other schools. They spend $700. Or they unschool them. They just take them home and don't do anything. And that's a hard one. Because then you feel responsible. It's my fault. If that child is not learning anything, it's because I don't love them. That's a good complex.
Is it your school here that at sixth grade you interview the families again?
No. We talked about it, but we weren't sure that we were going to have the heart to say no after we've educated them for 6 years. And so we've been talking about it, but we have not pulled the trigger on that policy at all.
I will tell you, the most formative... Do you have children?
Yeah.
Your own? Once they're 12 years old, they're pretty much set in life. What you have at a 12-year-old is what you got. So if you had a child from first grade through sixth grade, I'd take them through 12. I wouldn't worry about it. They understand what's going to happen. They have friends. They have a social structure. I wouldn't take a sixth grader and expect him to go through high school. That would be tough. Like there's some things that enter into there.
So you don't see any value in the negative peer pressure that comes through the adolescent years.
Yeah, we've had students that were interested in alternate sexual behaviors. You gotta go.
It sounds like you got an open door and you can fire people easier than I can. You can't fire a family to save her neck.
Then solve that problem.
Grow a backbone.
Grow a backbone, something.
Can you hire Al to do that?
Hey, for the right price, I would.
Would you like a consultant?
Consulting your culture must be different in Texas than Lancaster.
No, listen.
It's different.
It is. But yeah, why is it?
Why is it? It's because we had some men in our community that said, this is not working, we're going here, and they made it happen. Like, I lived through those years.
But there's families that come to our churches that eventually are not the same page as what we want.
Right.
And now we have to say, oh, I keep coming, and we just ignore that they're influencing the culture of our school.
No, they need to be expelled.
How do you do?
Just call the dad up and say,
did you do some of that already?
Have you done that?
I think so.
No, you haven't. If you,
you would know if you were going to.
What we have done, this is even worse. The dad and the mom are still members of the church.
And we've expelled their child. And they're pleading with us.
We go to this church. We support the school. Please help us.
We're not the place for your daughter. I'm sorry. She's expelled. No questions asked. We're not going to revisit it again. There's no discussion period. We went through the process. We suspended her for a week. Come back with a plan. And we didn't like the plan. We didn't think. That's even worse. Because you have to look at that brother the next Sunday, and he's praying for his daughter in church. If she'd just be in school, maybe she'd be... You have to decide what's more important to you. And if the school is the most important thing, if you were hired to do a job, and that is take care of this school, then take care of the school.
Most times it's not the child that's the issue at school.
It's the parent.
Oh, it's the direction that parents are going.
Oh, my God, then get rid of them. You cannot have that. How can two walk together unless they be agreed?
If you don't have... Yeah, but you have a diversity. You're bringing town kids in, you're fine with that, and those that are in your church, you expel.
Sure. Because my stated goal, the church gave us a mandate, and we serve the church's mandate. And that mandate is to educate young men and women to be 21st century kingdom builders. Can you find our mission statement, please, James? Don't drop off.
So when's the point that we turn our school buildings into a business?
It should be.
I know. So when I look for teachers, you know, how did this mentality around us at school kind of, you know, serve?
Get rid of that tomorrow.
So how do you do that?
It's a man with a vision. You got to grow a backbone and stand up. I'm preaching again. How do you do that?
It's business, very business run. It seems
business has a wrong connotation. But you want a successful business, what do? You strong leadership and clear vision and a clearly defined product, clearly defined end goal, and the right people in the right seat. You have a successful business, right? You have your school.
Is there no room in your church for immaturity and growth?
Oh, our church is a hodgepodge. Who said this?
You should come visit our church. Our church is really
very diverse. Very diverse. We're not.
So a family might be a weak section of the brotherhood. How much time do you allow for growth, or you're out?
Oh, that's a tough question.
We are expelling from major issues.
We're expelling from major issues. That's right. That's right.
I appreciate that clarity, because sometimes some of us need a little space.
That's a good point. So if the direction, just come visit us. We're very diverse. And it's a challenge. There's some people that my children don't go to their house and play with. And how do you deal with that? But clarity goes a long way. Clearly define what you're trying to do. So we have pastors as high school teachers, and they're leading people to Christ in science class. Like, we don't make any beans about it that we're a Christian school. And one of our high school courses is you take a book of the Bible,
and you read it 3-4 times, you outline it, you dissect, they do all of this, and they're grading, and their grade is they have to invite 3 or 4 people from the community and lead a Bible study for 3 or 4 times to get all the way through the book. And then those people that have attended the Bible study help define their grade. So we're very... And so if you come to our school and you're not interested in the values, that you're going to kind of like, this isn't going to work. But I'm not in Lancaster. We serve one community. And so, yeah. Anybody have ideas? I've run out of ideas to help him.
Can your mission statement help define your mission statement at an honest conversation? Can that actually help you find, is this actually going to work long term, or is it better that we just don't even go here? This is what we want for our school, and this is where we're going, and are things lining up here?
So, yes, exactly. And our dress code is much more stringent than the church's dress code, and we don't make any beans about it. Absolutely no writing on clothes whatsoever. You'll be sent home if you come in with anything on your clothes.
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, read our vision and mission statement.
Mission. Our mission is to provide a Christ-centered school that assists parents in educating their children in social skills, character development, and the core academics. Vision. Our vision is to see young Christian men and women that find true meaning in daily life and are well prepared to meet the opportunities and challenges of 21st century kingdom building.
Thank you, James. Obviously, I didn't know my own mission.
Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you.
So we actually just had an issue like this in our school. She was a member, and they were clearly not on board with what we were doing. We still, you will get eyeballs at that. You will get people talking about that. But it's for the best of the school.
And I guarantee you won't have the problem very long. You do it one time and the word gets around. If you're a pushover, all the people that like to push people over are going to find you. You grow a backbone, problems go away. It's that way in business. I mean, it's that way in life. Any more ideas for him? I feel for you guys. I mean, it's a tough spot to be in, no doubt. Any more ideas? We still have time. If I'd stop preaching and listen, this would take longer. Yes.
How many board members versus students, three, five, seven?
Oh, great question. Great question. How many board members in your school? How many of you have 3 board members? 4 board members. 5 board members, that's us. 6 board members. 7? 8? You have 8 board members?
Awesome. So we have 9 board members, actually. It's 5 lay members and 4 ministerial board members.
4 ministerial board members.
So it's a board member from each church plus a 5th board member.
So you're all
from any church and a ministerial representative.
So you are a patron run school, straight up. That's a tough job.
We got 9 board members.
Oh, sorry, I stopped at 7.
3 from 3 supporting churches, and then we got 3 ministry advisors, and then we got our administrator principal. So there could be 15.
Yeah. So we have a team of 3 that's of the administration in our school. We have 8 teachers, 7 teachers, whatever it is, but 3 administrators. We have a principal, an academic dean, and a secretary type position. And those 3 sit on every board meeting, the whole board meeting long. Unless we have an admin session at the end. I mean, what do you call it? Executive session. Thank you. So, but 90% of the board meetings are there. And we have a ministerial representative and 5 board members. So 6, we have 9 people that are at every board meeting too.
But how many of those would vote?
None. Just the board.
Just the actual board.
Just the actual board.
The board and the ministerial advisors
would do it. Yes, our ministerial advisor doesn't vote. Because we early on, we saw the issues with churches using schools to control problems in homes. And that's a
flat no to us. We have two pastors that are teachers, and they were both ordained after they were already employed by us. So after the ordination, we made it clear to them under no uncertain terms, if we see knowledge that you only received outside of school being used at school, or if we see knowledge that you only got at school being used in your pastoral role, this teaching position will come to an end. We're not interested in being an arm of the church to control homes. We have a job to do, and our pastoral representative, we want him there to help hear problems that are festering and bring those to the church. He's not there to control the church or vice versa. We have two separate roles. That's just the way we do it. You can do it however you want.
So it sounds like you're an idea man, Mike. You probably get a lot of squishing. You know, that's a bad one, right? So how do you feel about... Well, you mentioned that earlier, that they shoot down...
If you're a fool, you keep your mouth shut, nobody knows. You open your mouth, there's no doubt.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So how do you feel like that works with your administration team being there, the whole board meeting? Do you feel like that's a great environment for you just to be throwing out these wild... If you're not a teacher, you don't understand all the teacher sides of it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I was a teacher for 2 years.
Okay, well, maybe you have insight. Well, I feel like it's...
I fought it. Go ahead.
I feel like at times, like, given all these ideas, that maybe I'm offending our administrator. You know, like, why can't we do it like this? Well, to him, it's like, obviously, you know, like, this don't work, or this is the way we've always done it. So do you feel like having the administrator there the whole time encourages flourishing of ideas, or does it just kind of stifle the whole thing? Like, what's your...
I'll be honest, I fought the idea tooth and nail. Did not want them there. Did you have a thought?
Well, yeah, we do the same. The ministry sits in, they got their ideas, but when it comes down to voting, you know, the ministry runs a church, the board runs a school. And
we're obviously we're a ministry of the church, so we're under their leadership.
Yeah, we communicate back and forth, bring the idea, they know what's happening. That way we don't have to go back and count to them what's happening. And then they'll take it to the team and on any issue. But that's the way we do it. It works good. We didn't know, you know, the larger you get, I'm hearing, you know, 5, 7, maybe, you know, might need to get a couple board members on board to help run.
So board members need to be there. We have subcommittees to do all the work then. And it's a job running a school. Making plans. Let me finish this while we have 5 minutes left. So if you have something pressing, get it ready. I fought it tooth and nail. But now I'm at the home vote. Because those administrators, they fight us tooth and nail for ideas. And you know how in a board meeting, we're obviously at higher conflict level in our board meetings than probably some of you are used to. How many of you know Leland that used to come? He's a deacon now, and so he resigned from the board. Oh, he and I would butt heads so bad. I mean, we think a lot alike, but we're both passionate about our ideas, and we'll just hang to the death on them. The good thing was that whenever the best idea wins, but when you do that with your staff, and you sit in a board meeting and you do all that, and you have this discussion, everybody comes out of that board meeting, this is the right way to do it. I believe in it, right? You've wrestled with it enough to get there, and then you go over to the administrative team and say, this is what we're doing. And they go, wait a minute, that's not going to work. Oh, yeah, it will work. We all decided. You weren't there. You didn't hear the discussion. We'll bring them into the discussion. And when they leave the room, now it's a plan that they can implement. If they're supposed to implement this plan or this idea or this change, if they wrestle through it with you, they don't have a decision in the matter. They can't vote on the matter. But they understand everything that went into that decision. And, because here's the other problem we have. We wrestle through it and have all these things, and then we come to them and say this, and they're like, you think about that? Oh, shoot, no, we didn't think about that. I'm going to go back to the board, do it again. Just bring them in. Have executive sessions. There's some things that you don't need to burden them with.
But there is a difference between having an administrator that's been in the school for 20 years, or
sure.
In our situation, we had one that was 30 years, and he left. And then those sessions are completely different now. The new administrator is much more open to ideas, but it's fine. They're different personalities, but they're also, after 20 years, you're going to be a little bit more
set in your ways.
You got it.
Yep. So it depends. Basically, what I'm hearing, it depends. Don't be afraid to make tough decisions. You're a large school. There's a lot of people depending on you. You have a big responsibility. Don't shy away from that responsibility. Make the tough choices.
Oh, I did.
Good. Tell us.
No, I don't feel you. Okay.
We're out of time anyway. Anybody have any, with 2 minutes, burning questions? And I'm going to walk out at 10:15 because I got to be at the next session. Burning questions. I'm going to leave you with this.
One of the things that we just ran into, we had a teacher that came from a really small school, mm-hmm. and he was really used to like the board members interacting like regularly with the teachers. And with our school, it's different. It's a bigger school. Our board is more like a governing board.
Yep.
We're the principal, the primary contact in the school.
That's right.
And he relates to us.
Same as ours.
And this was really hard for him to deal with that. And
come to my next session.
Think about for our school. That's so when they come in to let them know our structure.
Expectations. Expectations are huge. Thank you for bringing that up. That's really important. And we hired, it was a young lady. Well, a young lady, 30. And she came from a small school. And we keep running into things that bother her.
Yeah.
And so we have to do a better job of setting expectations. This is the way things are here. And that segues into my closing point. And I started saying it earlier. Grow a backbone. Take leadership. You're responsible for a lot of people and a lot of homes. And your responsibility for these children, their lives, the families. Create vision. You have a big school. Let your administrative staff do their job and get up in the clouds and start looking out ahead 10, 15 years. You have to. If you don't want to grow, that's fine. Put your limit. But when you stop the size growth, continue to grow in quality. And you can't get, you don't have a culture of, then there's obviously other places people can send their children. You be the school that's $4,000 or $7,500 to go there. Watch your problems change when people are willing to put their mouth with their money where their mouth is and they start paying you $7,000 to educate your children. You have some really good parents that show up and say, I'll do what it takes to get the best. So, thank you for bearing with me. You've been a great audience. Thank you for participating. You're dismissed.